Good morning and welcome to the Morning Briefing for Thursday, October 4th, 2018. I'm your host, Eric Dame. Elizabeth Howe is your producer. And coming up on today's show, we're a little bit Marine Corps heavy. My apologies in advance for that. There's going to be a lot of grunting and pointing at things. That's how the communication is done, right? Well, maybe not so much with our two guests today. We're going to talk to Colonel Steve Weintraub. He's part of the team over at VetTix, the chief strategy officer. They've been on the show before, ran into him down at the Military Influencers Conference, pulled me to the side and said, hey, we got something pretty cool coming up. We're actually expanding our offerings beyond veterans to a group that has a lot of crossover with veterans and also deserves the respect and deserves the benefits that VetTix offers. Who am I talking about? First responders. They have now started FirstTix in addition to VetTix. We're going to talk to Steve about that and, of course, tell the VetTix story. They've given out over 5 million tickets to veterans, including tickets to the Super Bowl, Major League Baseball games, huge concerts, Taylor Swift concerts. They don't get much bigger than that. So we're going to talk to him about all of that and the new FirstTix offerings, and they are growing at a staggering rate. Of those 5 million tickets given out, 1.3 million given out last year alone. And then we're going to talk to another Marine, not quite a colonel, but he did his thing while he was in there. Joe Schinelli is the executive director of AMVETS, and he will join us later on in the show to talk about AMVETS. And he's also going to be in studio with us now to talk about the news headlines that are going on today, along with Libby Howe, who's in studio with us as well to talk about something she was at yesterday. Joe, good morning. How are you?
Kill.
There it is. Thank you so much for that. And Libby, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Yesterday, you actually weren't here when I got here so early in the morning because you had something that you went to go cover over by the Washington Monument here in our nation's capital, IAVA, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, who are doing their Storm the Hill event this week, actually had a special event, a call to action for their members and others yesterday. And that was planting a flag for every veteran who's committed suicide in the last year over by the Washington Monument. So since you were there and you were documenting it, I wanted to get your feelings on it. You know, how did it go? First off, you got over there bright and early in the morning, but I think they were already out there doing their thing by the time you got there at 6 a.m., right?
Yep. By the time I found them, they were already out prepping and setting up the grid and getting the flags. The volunteers were coming through all morning to put out the flags. 5,520 flags is a lot of flags.
Oh, yeah.
And so volunteers from IAVA were coming out all morning to put them down, and they all had very personal, powerful reasons for being out there.
What is the visual of that like? You were there when they finished putting down 5,520 flags. What did that look like?
Unbelievable. And hopefully it was as powerful for everyone walking by and for our leaders as it was for me. And it was very powerful talking to some of the volunteers that were out there, because they talked about how, even though these are numbers that they're super familiar with, they're familiar with the reports, right, they're familiar with the daily, they're familiar with the statistics, and still, even for them, seeing 5,520 flags was still bigger than they had imagined in their heads, and it's still an extremely powerful image for people who are very familiar with those statistics.
I mean, looking at those numbers, that's a small town being wiped off the map in a year. I mean, if you think about it that way, it really does kind of drive the point home. Now, of course, that's on the Mall. There are a ton of tourists who come to Washington, D.C. to see the White House, the Washington Monument, where this took place. Did you notice the people walking by? I mean, were they taking notice? Were any of them asking what was going on or anything like that?
Yes. And of course, that was the ultimate goal of the project, was to raise awareness of this problem. And it was great because there were people that were driving along 14th Street holding up traffic because they were yelling out their windows asking, what are these flags? And there were tourists coming by taking pictures. There were even commuters and tourists who stopped on their way to wherever they were going and asked if they could participate and took up some of the flags and placed some of the flags on their own. So it was great awareness and participation from everyone that was walking by, driving by, headed on their way.
Of course, people can go to connectingvets.com to see the photos and video and the story that you did over there, and I highly recommend they check it out. Libby, this is your first time on the show, so we're going to do the basic question. Now, you are a member of the Connecting Vets team. You are one of the military family members of the Connecting Vets team, providing, what should we call it, the brat perspective. You grew up with a parent serving in the military. Just give us a little bit of your background and your connection to the military.
So both of my parents were Air Force. My mom left after my sibling was born, but my father was in for 32 years in the Air Force. We moved 16 times before I turned 18, which is kind of my claim to military dependent fame.
That's insane. Yeah.
So it was, proud to have that opportunity. And I've always been proud of my military heritage. And I'm also very aware of some of the challenges that come on the family side of the military experience.
There certainly are challenges that are unique to the military families. And I mean, for myself, I got married and had a kid after I got out, so I only saw it from the outsider's perspective. You lived it, and you're going to be able to provide that perspective for the ConnectingVets.com team. And we thank you so much for your ability to do that. When it comes to the overall memories of moving 16 times in 18 years, which I thought I moved a lot. I moved 6 or 7 times in 13 years. You've got me beat by a long shot. What's the prevailing memory for you of your time growing up with both of your parents serving at one point and then your dad continuing into your adult life?
Cardboard boxes, probably. No. And I was stationed in Germany for a long time. And so I had great cultural opportunities. I think I probably remember weekend train trips to Paris.
Oh, wow.
That were, at the time, as an angsty teenager, I didn't appreciate them as much as I should have. But it was the culture and also the beyond my family, the family environment in the military. So you move from place to place to place. And there were familiar faces no matter where you went, because the military is small and people move with you. And so I think the sense of community within the military and also the sense of culture that you get from being a military dependent and moving that often are definitely some of the aspects that I remember most.
It's funny that you mentioned the cardboard boxes. I saw a meme that someone put up online the other day, which was the top of a child's face, basically, like from the nose up, looking out over a cardboard boxes with cardboard boxes all around them. And the text on it said, like, a military brat captured in its native environment. And it's true. You're an example of that. Moving 16 times in 18 years. My goodness. I mean, if you lived in Germany for a while, I'm doing the math, and you must have moved a couple of times within Germany, which is interesting in and of itself. Libby's got a lot of interesting stories to tell about her life, and she's going to be pointing out some of the great things taking place in the military and a military family community on ConnectingVets.com. Libby, thank you so much for your time this morning. We greatly appreciate you coming on in.
Thank you.
Now let's move on to you, Joseph P. Chinelli. I don't know. What's your middle initial?
R.
R.
I'm not telling you what it is.
I think I knew that. Roberto. Joseph Roberto Chinelli, Executive Director of AMVETS, Veteran of the United States Marine Corps. Of course, you work with the other VSOs. So IAVA here in D.C., they've got their team, Tom Porter, Melissa Bryant, Steph Mullen, and the rest. What do you think about events like this, where you go out and you do this symbolic thing where it may not be, getting legislation passed, but it's still important to do things like this to bring attention to issues like veteran suicide, especially with the recent report coming out that shows the suicide rate has actually gone up in the community of veterans between the ages of, I think it's 24 and 54.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We all work together here. We're really proud of what IAVA did yesterday. And, during your two-hour show today, about two veterans will die by suicide. Mm. It's very powerful. And to be able to put it all in one spot, we are a visual society. And so being able to really illustrate how deep this problem is and being able to do that within view of our capital and of the White House, very strong, very powerful.
It is, and it's great to see. And one of the things that I like and that I've learned since coming to D.C., I didn't know if or what kind of interaction there was between AMVETS, the American Legion, the VFW, IAVA, DAV, all these fantastic organizations. I've been able to see that you guys, you come together and you work on things that are important, things that you believe in. So it is really a fantastic thing to see in person. And I wish more people knew about it. And that's part of what we're trying to do is get the word out about that. Of course, another part of what we're trying to do is talk about the latest and greatest or not so greatest news within the military and veteran community. And I've said it before, Joe. People will come up to me and they'll be like, oh, you served in the, thank you for your, I respect and love everybody you ever served. And I look at them and I say, well, thank you. But I'm thinking, everybody? Because I knew some real scumbags who wore the uniform. I absolutely did. And it looks like I've got another one that I can add to that list, because one of my fellow sailors, a U.S. Navy veteran, has been arrested in Utah. Yesterday, he was arrested in connection with those envelopes, the suspicious envelopes that were sent to President Trump, Secretary Mattis, as well as SecNav Admiral John, or sorry, not SecNav. Top Admiral of the Navy. How am I forgetting what his title
Chief
is?
Chief of Staff?
No, he's got a, oh boy. I guess I got to turn in my crow. No longer a sailor because I can't remember. Anyway, the top admiral, the Navy's representative on the chairman of the Joint Chiefs. Boy, if somebody's on Facebook Live and can give me what that title is, that would be appreciated because I feel like a doofus right now. Well, William Clyde Allen III. What is it about people who go by the full name? It's always like John Allen Muhammad. You know, you go, John Wayne Gacy. You've got a three-name thing if people go by that full name.
So my kids all have four names, so hopefully they
won't. Well, that four is not three. It seems to be the rule of threes. But William Clyde Allen III, he's 39 years old. He joined right around the time that you and I did, 1998 to 2002, served in the Navy. Well, guess who sent those envelopes, according to the feds? The FBI went out and got him there. Guess who sent those envelopes to Secretary of Defense and the CNO? That's his name, Chief Naval Operations. My gosh. Oh, and there you go. Pete Burden. Thank you so much, Pete. He's a Marine, and he knew what the job was.
Kill.
Vietnam veteran Marine who also worked security at Woodstock on horseback as a police officer and now works for the Navy in recruiting. So he's got an interesting career. Yeah, CNO. That's
sounds
what
like
I was looking for.
Sounds like a future guest for your show, right?
He's
there.
Been on the show before. We may have him on again. He's also a stand-up comedian. Took up stand-up, later on in life. I'm not going to give Pete's age out there, but his hair may be a little bit grayer than it used to be. Anyway, back to William Clyde Allen III. 4 years in the Navy. He's the guy who sent these envelopes that they initially said had ricin in them, which, of course, is a weapons-grade biological weapon, essentially. It's a poison. It's like anthrax or one of those things. So it turns out there wasn't ricin in there, but actually castor seeds. Castor seeds are what is used to make ricin. They're harmful according to, here's a story from News Channel 3, with info coming from the AP that says castor seeds are dangerous if they are swallowed. Okay. Just about every kind of seed can be dangerous if it's swallowed. So, the castor seeds, I don't know why somebody would have put those in there unless they were intending to make it seem like there was ricin, because it can be detected as ricin by the scanners and stuff. This guy's been arrested, and it's not the first time we're learning. He's actually was charged with child sex abuse involving two girls that he had a relationship of trust with in 2004. He's got some other things. He pleaded guilty to lesser neglect and abuse charges in that case, is not registered as a sex offender. That's kind of upsetting. I mean, we don't know the details of the case, but when you hear about someone being charged with that, And the same year, a woman filed a protective order against him in a separate case. The details of that aren't public, but the protective order was agreed to. And then in 2008, he pled guilty to attempted aggravated assault, did about 2.5 years in prison, getting out in 2011. So his post-naval time has certainly been littered with some big-time red flags. Then also, and this is the benefit that you get, listening to a show that has a veteran on it. Yeah, a Navy veteran who can't remember what the CNO is, but still. 4 years in the Navy, he got out as a fireman apprentice. That's an E2. Let me explain something to people who are not familiar with military ranking. The first two ranks going from E1 to E2 and then E3, those are automatic. You don't need to do anything other than not get in trouble. If you don't get in trouble, you go from E1 to E2, I think in 6 months, and then it's 9 months from E2 to E3. So by the time you've been in for a year and a half maximum, you should be an E3. This guy did 4 years, and I believe he was a damage controlman when he was serving in the Navy. Let me double check on that. Damage control fireman apprentice. He's a firefighter, essentially. That's what DCs are. 4 years and got out as an E2. Which tells me that his post-Navy career probably aligned a little bit with his during-the-Navy career. You don't get out as an E2 after 4 years unless you have some issues, some problems. So this is someone who, should he have been on a watch list? I'm not saying that. I'm not saying you do 4 years and you have some NJP and you get busted down a couple of times that you should never be allowed to function in society again. But it gives us a little bit of an insight into who this guy is.
I'm guessing he was on someone's radar because they turned this one around pretty quickly.
Well, no. Do you know how he got caught? That's the best part of this story. So we'd like to think that it's like NCIS or CSI. They're in some room with black lights and they're like, enhance the image and then pull down a satellite. No, this doofus used a return address that's apparently where he lived, on those envelopes. So it wasn't like they had a lot of checking to do. Now, this is all alleged at this point, but this is the info that we're getting. Guy's got a criminal history, did not seem to do too well while he was serving in the Navy, and then uses his own return address on the envelopes, and he mails castor seeds in, which can be detected as ricin, to the White House and SecDef and the CNO. You know, it appears that maybe he has some issues with the Navy. And again, got out at E2 after 4 years. Appears the Navy had some issues with him as well.
So have you seen his mugshot?
Yeah, the smiling one.
He does not look upset to be arrested. In fact, I think he looks elated.
Yeah. You know what I noticed from that? Little guy. About 5'4", looks
like. Right?
So yeah, not a big fella. Just goes to show you, don't worry about the size of somebody. It's the little guys that can get you sometimes. And me, I'm just like an average heighted person. So I can look down upon those who are shorter and taller than me. Castor seeds, though, I looked into this, and people might find this interesting, or they might not. This is what happens to me when I go online, Joe. I fall down a Wikipedia hole, you know, where you just, hey, I was looking up stats for the 86 Mets, and now I'm at, like, Genghis Khan's second wife. How did I get from point A to point B? Sometimes you don't know. This one I do. So I was like, castor seeds. I didn't know that was the basis for ricin. I thought ricin was like a chemical compound. No, it's a natural thing. Castor seeds, I wanted to find out what the deal is. So castor seeds, which has the castor bean inside of it, it comes from a plant, obviously, and they produce castor oil with it, which I've heard of, but it was like an old-timey thing. It's like, maybe they use castor oil to treat like rickets or shingles or something like that. I don't know. So I went to WebMD and looked it up. Castor seeds without the hull are used for several things, including birth control, constipation, leprosy, and syphilis.
That sounds like a very valuable plant.
Yeah, seed. It certainly does. Castor oil is used as a laxative, also for constipation, also at times to start labor in pregnancy and to start the flow of breast milk. So this is like a wonder plant. It does some good things, right? Some people also apply castor seed paste to the skin for inflammatory skin disorders, boils, carbuncles, whatever that is. I don't know. I thought that was a last name. Pockets of infection, inflammation, and migraine headaches, used topically to soften skin. In manufacturing, castor seeds are also used to make paints, varnishes, and lubricating oils. So this is something I had no idea about that does a lot of things. Ricin is made from the shell. They take the shell and they grind it down, and it's a bad thing, obviously. It's weapons grade. It's used as a biological weapon, not a good thing. The seeds themselves, though, used for a lot of things, but not dangerous, again, unless you swallow them, like that news station said. I mean, yeah, so quarters are also dangerous if you swallow them. Don't swallow them. That's the key to that. But
so if you get seed shells in the mail, don't swallow them.
Yeah, do not swallow seeds that arrive in the mail, which that's probably not what Secretary Mattis was going to do. Like, oh, what are these? Man, they look tasty. There was a great meme going out there of like of someone saying, like, you know, Secretary Mattis responded to the person who mailed the letters by saying, thank you for the ricin. It was delicious on his peanut butter sandwich. Please send more, you know, because, of course, he's tough as nails, the old Marine. Speaking of old Marines, R. Lee Ermey, the gunny, of course, an honorary gunnery sergeant, got out as, I think, a staff sergeant, didn't he? Yeah,
he did.
Yeah, yes. So he got out.
The late, great R. Lee Ermey.
The late, great R. Lee Ermey. Mm-hmm. Passed away very recently. We actually had some great audio that our own Chaz Henry did with R. Lee Ermey, having him read the Marine Corps poem, I guess, or whatever it's called. It's a fantastic thing. You can find it on ConnectingBets.com, and also we're on social media at ConnectingBets on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Before the gunny passed away, he was, of course, a film star, Full Metal Jacket, small role in Apocalypse Now, I think, was his first big screen role. Was featured all over the place. The Toy Story movies, he was the guy. He was the guy in charge of the Green Army Men, which for a Marine, I mean, that must have been hurtful for him. Like, can't we call them Army Men? No, Gunny, we can't. He was doing a TV show before he died called Military Makeover. Have you ever heard of Military Makeover?
Yeah, actually, we had been working with the producer in one of their episodes, yes.
That's very cool. So you've worked mm-hmm. with them before. So for people who aren't familiar with Military Makeover, mm-hmm. what exactly is it that they do? It's kind of like an Extreme Makeover Home Edition for veterans and military members?
Exactly. So they go in and they will often find a veteran who has a particular need that's not being met by the homes that are currently on the market. And they'll go in, they'll customize a house for a veteran. Often it's a wounded or otherwise injured veterans, and they'll go in, they'll customize, and then they do the big reveal, and they make a big TV show out of it.
Also featured on the show in the past, we've had some pretty big names in the veteran community. I'm looking at a picture of Marcus Luttrell in a military makeover shirt when he was there to help out a veteran, who I believe may have been a blind veteran, if I remember correctly. Well, of course, sadly, Arlie Ermey passed away earlier this year. You know, it was one of those things that everybody knew about, everybody thought about. But one thing that you probably don't think about when someone like that leaves this earth, he had a lot of things still going on, including military makeover. And while he was the host of the show and the face of the show and brought that Arlie Ermey energy to it, the show has still got some great things to do, right? So who do you bring in to replace Arlie Ermey? Because, man, that is somebody that is difficult to replace. Well, they've done it now. I found this out by seeing a news story from Fox 4 in Kansas City, Missouri. It's because they're doing a home in Smithville. Do you know who the new host of Military Makeover is? Can you think of anybody that you would want in that position? Got to be a veteran, and I'll give you a hint, TV personality.
So someone who's filling Arlie Ermey's shoes.
Taking over as host of the show.
I can't think of
it. You can't really fill Arlie Ermey's shoes.
No, that's what I mean, you know. Maybe that's why I'm having trouble.
That's difficult to do.
Really trying to focus on that, and I just can't imagine.
You'd have to be a former Paris Island DI, and I don't know of any other former DIs from Paris Island who work in the entertainment industry. It's actually a Navy veteran. There's your second hint. So television personality, Navy veteran.
Rob Riggle was the only one popping in my mind. He's a Marine.
He would be a good one, and he's a Marine. And that would be, I think that's someone who could probably come fairly close to filling Arlie Ermey's shoes. Both funny guys. Of course, Rob Riggle, a little bit more straight out funny. Arlie Ermey was sometimes funny and just how ridiculous and cantankerous he could be. It's a Navy veteran, Navy officer, TV personality, used to host a talk show. Are you getting any closer now?
Are we talking about Montel?
Montel Williams. You got it. You only needed three hints, including his job before this one.
Montel, I've worked with him here in D.C. a few times over the last couple of years. He gets pretty intense.
He does. And he's a guy who is, I mean, he is, I believe he's somewhere around like 60 years old now or something like that, and is still doing a lot of great active stuff out there. He's big into snowboarding, I know. Phil Briggs talked to him about that, and you can check that out on connectingvets.com. Montel, of course, is a former naval officer, very active in the veteran community. And I think it's kind of a good choice for that. You know, you have to pick someone who has the ability to be on TV, which isn't easy. You know, there are people who I've interviewed before who have come on even the radio and been like, oh man, I thought that was going to be a lot easier than it was. But then I'm sitting there, there's a microphone in front of me. There's some guy looking at me, waiting for me to answer. When it's TV, it's even more different and more intense. I can't tell you how many times I was working for AFN and you'd turn on the camera and someone who was just most personable mile a minute chatterbox turns into someone who's like, my name? I'm not sure. I don't know what my name is. There's a lot of interesting things out there. So you do, I think, have to give him props for choosing someone who's able to do it and apparently was available. So Military Makeover is going to be hosted by Montel Williams now. So that's good to see. One last thing I want to get to, and this involves every branch of the service, including the Marines. 7,000 Marines are currently non-deployable for various reasons. Medical reasons, health reasons, legal reasons, family reasons, all sorts of things that go there. The military has announced the deploy or get out policy from the DOD, saying that you have, if you're non-deployable for 12 months, you're out. You're deep sixed. You're tossed overboard, baby. Now they're saying, well, you might not have that 12-month mark. Because in a force-wide message posted Wednesday by the Marine Corps, they say they can start administrative or disability separation procedures before that 12-month mark. I'm not sure exactly if this is post-dating. So like if you've already been non-deployable for 6 months, do you then have 6 months to go? But very quickly, as we only have a minute left, how do you look at the non-deployable status? As a Marine who deployed several times, I deployed once in the Navy to Afghanistan and went overseas a bunch otherwise. How do you view this issue of non-deployable people for all these varied reasons?
Sure. When I was in the Corps, I thought that was already a rule. And I did see some veterans or some Marines at the time who were unable to deploy and they were processed out. And honestly, with the tempo where it still is, still a high-paced tempo, if you're not able to pull your own weight there, someone else is going to have to do double time, and that's really not fair, and it's not good for morale or for the mission.
Yeah, no, it's certainly not. And the mission, I think, is even more important than the morale. I mean, the Absolutely. Morale can affect the mission, but the mission, we got a comment. Oh, going back to the Gunny, Jeff Montague says he wouldn't mind seeing Gunny Bud Webster in front of a camera. I don't know who Gunny Bud Webster is, but I wouldn't mind seeing him either. How about Dale Dye? There's a good one for you. He could do it, although he's more intense, and he does have a sense of humor, but it's buried a little bit more deeply than Arlie Ermey's was. The two of them knew each other pretty well, I believe. But, yeah, so there's a lot going on in the military and veteran world. We're going to talk about it on the rest of today's show as well. Steve Weintraub, Marine Corps Colonel, Chief Strategy Officer of VetTix, he is going to be joining us in the next segment. And then Joe Schinelli is going to return, and we're going to talk about AmVets. We're going to talk about the latest and greatest issues that AmVets is taking head-on here in Washington, in D.C. and around the country. It's the Morning Briefing from Entercom Radio's ConnectingVets.com. We will be back with Steve Weintraub of VetTix right after this. Welcome back to the Morning Briefing from Entercom Radio's ConnectingVets.com. I'm your host, Eric Dame, and I want to let you know something about the team at ConnectingVets.com. Each and every one of us either wore the uniform or is very closely related to someone who did. When I say closely related, I mean spouses, like our executive producer, Alice, or like Libby, producer of this show, who moved something like 16 times in 18 years while growing up as a military brat. It's because of those connections, and of course those of us who served in the military ourselves, that we understand the difficulty that you go through when transitioning, the difficulty that can face you as you live your veteran life. That's why we're trying to get you the information, the benefits, the good stuff that you need every day. And we're doing it right there at ConnectingVets.com and also on social media, where we are at ConnectingVets on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Our next guest represents a very impressive organization that I have actually used. The last time I talked to him, I hadn't used it yet. Now I have, so I can vouch for how easy it is, how good it is, and what a wonderful program it is. His name is Steve Weintraub. He is a United States Marine Corps colonel. He also works for the organization VetTix. Steve, how are you doing today?
I'm doing awesome. Thanks, Eric, and thanks for the opportunity to come on your show and talk a little bit about VetTix.
For those who didn't hear the last time that we talked, which, God, I think was about a year ago or so, let's refresh their memories on what exactly VetTix is and where it came from. So I guess I'll ask that question. What is VetTix, Steve, and where did the idea come from?
Okay, what VetTix is it's Veteran Tickets Foundation, and what it is we get donated event tickets, and those event tickets can be to ball games, can be to concerts, it can be to performing arts, could be children's events, it could be mixed martial art fighting. You never know what kind of events we get, but these tickets are donated by performers, by artists, by management groups, by venues, and even private donors. So these tickets get donated, and then what we do is we turn around and we distribute them to our members. And so we'll talk a little bit more about that, but we started 10 years ago. We're actually, you know, this is our 10-year anniversary. So we started back in 2008, and what happened was our founder and CEO was at Super Bowl in Glendale, Arizona. And we're based out of Phoenix. And so he's a Navy vet, and he was at the game with his buddy, who's a fellow veteran. And they're there. They watch the color guard march on the colors, national anthem, colors march off. And they noticed that there's no seats for the color guard after they march off. They were there to stay and watch the game, but they didn't have any physical seats. They were in the mezzanine level. And so our CEO, Mike, he was looking around and he noticed throughout the game that there was empty seats, literally seats at the Super Bowl that weren't used. So he came up with the idea of, you know, how can we get these unused seats? How can he get these tickets to unused seats and turn around and get them into the hands of veterans, service members, so they can attend these events and bring their friends and family? So that's how the concept started, and it started locally here in Phoenix, Arizona. But since then, it's morphed into a nationwide organization. We've got over 946,000 VetTix members, what we call VetTixers, and we've distributed over 5.3 million tickets since we started.
It's really an amazing program, and as I said, I have now used VetTix. As you mentioned, mixed martial arts, that's one of my favorite sporting events to go to. I've actually worked in MMA as well. There's a promotion in Maryland called Shogun Fights, and there were tickets available there. I entered for those tickets. I received them and ended up paying something like $15 for tickets that would have cost $300. I mean, is it always that kind of a deal? Is it are so many of them, like, you know, coming down from hundreds of dollars down to $15-$20 for a ticket?
Yeah, absolutely. And so that's where these tickets are donated. They're donated by donors, and there is a small transaction fee for these tickets, but it's never going to be more than $14.97. And that's not per ticket, that's per transaction, regardless of what the face value of those tickets are. Because number one, you pay a couple bucks for some tickets, you've got some skin in the game, so you're going to go. And that obviously makes our donors happy, because they donate these tickets. What do they want? They want butts in seats. And in this case, it's veterans currently serving military, their families having a good time. So at that kind of to get tickets at that type of deal, you can't go wrong.
You really can't. Now, what is the process for it? For someone who's sitting out there saying, so what do? I just go to the website and log on and there's tickets and I just click on them. Are there different ways that people can get tickets? How do they go about it?
So to get tickets, you have to be a VetTix member. And we call our VetTix members VetTixers. So Eric, you are a VetTixer.
Yes, I am.
So yes. And so what happens is that you go to our website, vettix.org, vettix.org. Upper right hand corner, it'll say create an account. So you click on that, and it's going to ask you some questions, and we verify your service, either as currently serving military, a veteran, honorably discharged veteran, or the immediate family member of service member killed in action. And so how we do that is ID.me is the verification process that we use for that. So if you're already a member of ID.me, it makes it that much easier. So it takes 3 to 5 minutes to sign up. It doesn't cost anything to sign up. Once you get signed up and verified, then you'll start receiving emails about events in your area. So what happens is that when you in your as you're signing up, it'll say, "Hey, I want to be notified of events within a, you know, there's a drop down of X amount of miles within my location." So you'll get daily emails every morning about events in your area. If there's something you're interested in, you click on that link and you put in for the event, and it's that easy.
It really is quite painless. Again, I've gone through it once now, and I plan on going through it again. We do keep an eye on it to see what we might be able to take the family to, and there's no shortage of events. In fact, I remember just earlier this year during the college football national championship season, as we were getting closer and closer to that game, there were actually tickets to that event available through VetTix. So, you know, this isn't just the small local events or, say, a baseball game at the end of the season when the team is having trouble filling the stands. There's some really major events, aren't there, Steve?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we had two tickets donated to us by a VetTixer to the Super Bowl in Minneapolis this past season. So there, you just never know what you're going to get. This VetTixer, huge Vikings fan, bought the tickets early in the season in the hopes that the Vikings were going to go. When the Vikings fell out of contention, he had no desire to go, so he donated them to VetTix. So some lucky VetTixer in the local Minneapolis area got to see the Super Bowl, two tickets for $15. So sometimes these tickets, they might be up in the nosebleed, or they might be courtside or behind the dugout of the New York Yankees. So you just never know what kind of tickets you're going to get.
We're speaking with Steve Weintraub, United States Marine Corps Colonel and Chief Strategy Officer for VetTix, an organization that helps veterans and active duty military get tickets to events at a significant discount, basically just a handling fee for those tickets that are donated by artists, by the places where they happen, by the events, by fellow vet ticksers as well. And Stephen, as I understand it, you guys are growing significantly. I mean, there's a lot of people signing up every day for the program. That's going to be expanding even more because you guys recently, I think just in the last couple of months, announced you're going to include first responders in this as well. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah, spot on. And so what we've done is we've opened this up to first responders. So that includes police, firefighters, and EMTs. And there's the eligibility requirements there as well, and that's through ID.me. You get verified. It's the same exact process. And if you're a first responder, you can go to firstticks.org, 1st.org, or you can even sign up on the VetTix page. It doesn't matter. It's transparent. And, you know, Eric, the reason why we do this is because we want to give back. We want to say thank you to our service members currently serving, our veterans, and to our first responders, because we know that what they do is a very important job. And so it's our way to say thank you and, you know, spend some time with your friends, with your family at an event for a couple hours a day and an afternoon to kind of rebuild relationships. Maybe you were deployed, you went on a lot of deployments, and so you missed a lot of birthdays or special events with your family. So by taking them to these events, it's just a way to make up for that lost time. And kind of the cool thing about this, Eric, is that we get testimonials from our vet ticksers saying, you know, hey, thanks to vet ticks and XYZ donor for these tickets. My family and I had a great time, so on and so forth. And we have over 300,000 testimonials. And of those testimonials, we have over 500 testimonials that talk about how attending these events has helped veterans, service members, first responders with coping with daily challenges, with reintegration, with PTS. Getting out in these crowds with other people is helping them with some of the daily challenges they have in life. And the cool thing is that a lot of times these tickets are donated in blocks. So when you're at an event, you're sitting in the same section next to, in front of, behind other veterans, other service members, other first responders. So you're kind of sitting with members of your tribe. So it's really fun.
It is a lot of fun, and those numbers are very impressive. I mean, when you're talking about around 300,000 testimonials, those are just people who took the time to write a, hey, nice little thank you letter for VetTix to be put on the site. You already mentioned over 5 million tickets given out since 2008. That's an impressive number in and of itself. But you being the chief strategy officer for VetTix, Steve Weintraub, I want to ask you, 2017, you guys went over 1 million tickets. 1.3 million tickets are the numbers that I've seen for 2017 alone. What does it feel like to be part of a team that's gotten something that's grown over the last 10 years into something where you're probably going to be doing 5 million tickets a year before too long?
You know, it's funny, but you're right. Last year we did over 1 million tickets just in the year, and so for us it's very gratifying. I mean, for us it is so gratifying that we're hitting these numbers because we're making an impact in society. We're an organization that it's fun to send these people, these veteran service members, first responders to these events, and you know, as a way to say thank you. But for us, it's so gratifying because this is what we get to do. We get to really enhance the quality of life of our members instantaneously. It's a very instantaneous type of gratification that we receive.
Along with the VetTix and now FirstTix, which is the first responder version of this, which is, you know, essentially going to be the same program just for your firefighters, police, and EMTs, you guys do even more than that. I mean, there's Heroes Wish, which allows certain deployed, wounded, and families of those killed in action, people who qualify to put in a request for an event, and you guys will actually work to try to get them tickets, right?
Yeah. Heroes Wish is, we only have two programs, Tickets for Troops, and that's what we've been talking about, and Heroes Wish. And what Heroes Wish does is if you meet the criteria as you had described, maybe within 6 months of redeploying back to the United States from an overseas tour, you can request a hero's wish. And what that is a lot of times these individuals, they don't have the financial means to take their family to some type of location or event that they would like to. So they put in for a hero's wish. And what we do is we review the wish, make sure that they, number one, they qualify. And then we do our very best to grant that wish. And so what that is we will procure the tickets to said wish. So a lot of times it's, hey, my family and I, we've always wanted to go to Walt Disney World or, see such and such basketball game or whatever. Through Heroes Wish, love the opportunity to be able to do that. So what we do is we procure the tickets for that. Now, for them, they've got to put a little skin in the game as well. So unfortunately, we can't afford to pay their way, their meals, their expenses and everything. But if they can get to that venue, then we provide the tickets for them. And we've even had Heroes Wish requested tickets to Hamilton on Broadway, which we were able to procure. So another great program.
And those tickets are hard to come by, but that's the business that VetTix is in. And with Heroes Wish, they're going to do what they need to do to make those wishes come true. And with VetTix, just an amazing program that's available to all veterans out there, as well as active duty military members. Steve, a question for you. Is there a limit to how many requests people can put in or how many things they can look into getting tickets for? I'm just a couple blocks away from Nationals Park as I talk to you right now. And I know the Nationals have tickets up on VetTix all the time. Is it okay for someone to put in requests for several events in their area?
Yeah, I mean, put in for whatever that you're interested in, and you never know what you're going to get selected for. So sometimes it depends on the number of tickets available that we get from the donors, and so sometimes that's a factor. But we've got we've got algorithms that will ensure that, number one, nobody can game the system. So, you're not going to put in for three Nationals games three nights in a row, and you're probably not going to get selected for all three games. So part of it has to do with supply and demand. But if you don't get selected for an event, you'll get notified. But you don't have to say, okay, I'm just putting in for one event at a time. So, yeah, my advice is put in for whatever you see, and if you get selected, great. If not, keep trying.
We're speaking with Steve Weintraub. He is the Chief Strategy Officer of VetTix. And, Steve, let me ask you about this. As the CSO of an organization that's had such great success, as we said, over 5 million tickets in the last 10 years with over 1.3 million, coming close to 1.5 in 2017 alone, what is the roadmap to that kind of success that other people who have, maybe a similar organization who's doing, not operating within the ticket space, but operating a nonprofit, what would you recommend to those people who want to get to the level that VetTix has gotten to in such a short period of time?
One of the things that's really made us successful is number one, the concept. You can't deny that. But the other thing is the mission. And if you want to call it mission creep, we specialize. We only have two programs, and we don't deviate from those. So we stay focused on our mission. But what we also do, which made us successful, is partnering with other, quality VSOs in the veteran space. And so, we have strategic partners to include Armed Services, YMCA, VFW, DAV, Navy Marine Corps Relief Society. And because we don't do the things that they do, and we don't try to, but what we do is have these informal partnerships with them where we can refer our members to those organizations if they require those types of resources. And we promote them, our strategic partners, to our VetTixers and vice versa. So part of it is just playing well in the sandbox and having a good mission and sticking to it.
Steve Weintraub of VetTix. If people are interested in joining up with VetTix and just as importantly, donating to VetTix, maybe wanting to become part of the VetTix team along with you there, how can they go about doing all of those things?
It's super easy. You just go online and just go to vettix.org or firsttix.org, 1st.org or vettix.org. And then in the upper right-hand corner of our homepage, there's a create an account link. There's a donate now link. There's a login link. And everything can be done right there on that homepage. And the cool thing is that people ask us, hey, how come you don't have an app? And the simple answer is that apps constantly have to be updated. And so the way our website is set up is that even on your mobile device, if it's a smartphone or a tablet, you can do everything on your mobile device, your smartphone. You can create an account. You can sign in. You can put in for tickets. You can get your tickets all on your mobile device. You can obviously do it on your computer at home. But the way our site is set up, it's that easy to create an account and to navigate through there and put in for tickets.
It seems like everything that VetTix is set up is to make it easy on the people who are looking for the tickets, the veterans and first responders, and the people who want to donate. I mean, there's a QR code on the website I'm looking at right now that you can just scan to donate to VetTix. It's that easy. And I can, again, I can confirm it is easy to go through the process of joining up for VetTix and easy to get those tickets, as I was able to receive tickets to the Shogun Fights event in Baltimore, Maryland recently and had a great time. As over 5 million others have. Go check out vettix.org and you can see 300,000 plus testimonials right there on the website. Steve Weintraub, United States Marine and Chief Strategy Officer for VetTix. Thank you so much for your time today. And more importantly, thank you for what you guys are doing over at VetTix. It really is a fantastic program.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for your time, Eric. I appreciate it. And not only that, but for all you do for our veteran community. You do great work. Very much admired.
Well, thank you, Steve. We're doing what we can. You're listening to The Morning Briefing here on Entercom Radio's ConnectingVets.com. Connecting vets every day. Still to come on today's show, we are going to talk to Joe Schinelli, Marine Corps veteran and executive director of AmVets, about a number of topics. But going back to VetTix, and again, thank you to Steve Weintraub for coming on with us here today, a Marine Corps heavy show with him being a colonel in the Corps. Joe was on the enlisted side as one of those combat correspondent types, but VetTix is one of those organizations that's doing great things, doing wonderful things that are really just helpful and beneficial to the well-being, mentally, physically, socially, of veterans, being able to go out to these events. And it really is so simple to sign up. As he was just saying, ID me. If you have an account there already, it's going to be moments after you get to the site and click sign up that you're through. And if you don't, it doesn't take that long to set one up. And there are others that are similar. GovX comes to mind. That is basically an online marketplace that's available to veterans and first responders where you can purchase all manner of things. It's kind of like a private little Amazon for us, and you get great discounts. I went on there to buy some motorcycle gloves, ended up getting a t-shirt, some other stuff, because there were so many great deals on there. I mean, the t-shirt that I got was a Grunt Style original that was actually specific to GovX. You could only get it through GovX, and it's become one of my more popular t-shirts. Actually, a friend of mine said, where did you get that and how can I get one? Well, he's not a veteran. So I told him, well, you're not going to be able to get this one, but you can go to Grunt Style and get some of their other stuff. But the point that I'm making about GovX is it's so simple to sign up. You go, you verify yourself, you give like your last four and your dates of service. There's a database that it cross-checks it with. And I mean, within 2 minutes of clicking the sign up thing on that site, I was able to go there and buy whatever I wanted, you know, sunglasses, gear, tactical gear, electronics. And they're also doing tickets to events now, different than what they're doing at VetTix, because at VetTix, you're essentially getting those tickets for free. You pay the handling fee, which is essentially like 15, 20 bucks, something like that, which is just to get the tickets to you, whether they're delivered to you or delivered to the event, and you pick them up at will call or whatever. As I mentioned, we went to fights that for the four of us would have cost, it was a while ago, but I think it was like $350 if we went by face value of the ticket, and I think we paid 15 to pick them up. Now, again, I've said before, not very good at math, but I do know a deal when I see one, and that one was fantastic, and really didn't have to do anything special for it other than sign up for the site. So if you get the chance or if you're interested, sign up for VetTix. Doesn't cost you anything. You go on there, you look at the events. If you got a family, maybe there's a kids event going on, maybe there's a show coming to town, athletic events, if there's professional or semi-professional or minor league teams in your area, there's a pretty good chance that there's going to be something available on VetTix for that. So highly recommend it. And again, not being paid to say that, just telling you, this is one of those things that you can take advantage of that really can be helpful and can just lead to a good time for you, your friends, your family. Could not recommend it enough. All right, as I said, you're listening to The Morning Briefing, Entercom Radio's ConnectingVets.com. Find us on social media. We are at Connecting Vets on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Coming up next, my former Defense Information School classmate. He's doing some pretty big things these days after leaving the Marine Corps. He is now the Executive Director of AmVets. We'll talk to Joe Schinelli right after this. Welcome back to The Morning Briefing, brought to you by Entercom Radio's ConnectingVets.com. Connecting Vets every day is our slogan, and it's what we're doing. And do you know where we're doing it? Well, of course, on the website, ConnectingVets.com, but also on social media. We are at Connecting Vets on all the big four platforms, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. We're on all of those. MySpace page, still working on it. Tom is not responding to my emails. I told him we'd keep him in our top eight. He's like, well, I don't care, whatever, MySpace is king. So anyway, check us out on the actual social media platforms that matter. We are there, and you'll be kept abreast of the latest and greatest stories, news, and information coming out of the ConnectingVets.com team, including the story I did yesterday, which is picking up some steam, about Alpha Nerds Guild. This is a nonprofit. Focuses on video games to build a community, and while doing that, also help vets who are suffering from PTSD, depression, disabilities that keep them homebound. What they're actually doing is they've built this community of online gamers, and then they're awarding consoles or giving consoles to veterans who are diagnosed, and you have to be provably diagnosed with PTSD, depression, things like that. They're actually providing Xbox Ones and PS4s to people through that organization. You can find out all about the story, and you won't believe who founded it. Such a nice thing, founded by a guy who's kind of known for yelling at people about being fat on the internet. John Burke, former star of Fox TV's American Grit with John Cena, social media superstar. He's got 600,000 followers plus on Facebook alone. He actually started that group. Well, you know what? Go read the story and you'll find out all the details about it. But he started it thinking it was something he'd be able to make money off of. When he saw how much it was helping people, he said, no. This is the nonprofit I need to be involved in, because he'd been kind of screwed over by several nonprofits before that. So check it out and check out all the great stories on ConnectingVets.com. You're also going to find a lot of stories that focus on the great work that the VSOs are doing in our nation's capital and around the country. And of course, among those groups is American Veterans, a.k.a. AmVets, who are doing some fantastic things, getting involved in every veteran issue that you can think of. Their executive director, Marine Corps veteran Joe Schinelli, who you may have heard in the first segment of the show, is joining me again in studio. Joe, how are you doing this morning?
Never better, Eric.
There is what I was expecting to hear, not that kill, 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 or whatever it was that went on there earlier with the Marines. So AmVets, of course, the most inclusive of all the big VSOs. Every veteran is eligible for membership in AmVets as long as they have an honorable discharge or above, correct?
Correct, including National Guard and Reserve. And I make that a special distinction because we're seeing a lot of new National Guardsmen come in. And now the National Guard is not deploying to Iraq and Afghanistan the numbers that they used to. They're finding a hole in the VSO community and wanting to know where they can go. And stuff with someone we want to reach out to, someone that we have a home for.
And of course, your new executive director was on the show just a couple of weeks ago telling us about how his priority is to reach out to women veterans, of course, who are underrepresented and underserved within the veteran community when it comes to the VSOs and things like that. So again, inclusive organization, AmVets, and working on a variety of issues. Of course, one of the big ones that every VSO that I can think of deals with on a daily basis is the VA. And the VA recently released their newest performance ratings for each of their 146 hospitals, citing improvements in the past year at some of the lowest performing facilities. I've heard some people call some of that into question and said, like, well, what they're doing is just changing the way they report it. It's not really anything's changed all that drastically. How is AMVETS viewing this new performance rating for the VA medical centers?
So we work pretty closely with the Veterans Health Administration, which is part of the VA. It's the medical side of the VA. The truth is, from what we can tell, they have not changed how they rate very much. This rating chart, if you will, which is a star system, 1 through 5, was never really intended for public consumption. USA Today had the list leaked to it a couple years ago, back when Dave Shulkin was leading VHA and Bob McDonald was the secretary toward the end of the Obama administration. And a lot of people were shocked when they found that their local hospital was a 1-star, and then a lot of other veterans were not shocked when they heard that their local hospital was a 1-star. At that point in time, I coined the phrase that this was Yelp for veterans hospitals.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how it's been. At first, we were a little worried about having this leaked, but now we think it's a positive thing. We as an organization have gone into different places for town hall meetings. And we've been using this chart as one of the elements that we consider when we decide where to go. Down in Tennessee, we were down there in Nashville and Memphis, and those are both 1-star facilities. So those are 19 of the 146 VA hospitals. 19 of them are 1-star. And it's about the equal number that are 5-stars. So this is showing us where they need to focus. We think that it needs to drill down a little bit deeper than the overall medical center. They need to be looking at by the departments. Some have great cardio department in this hospital, even though the overall hospital is poor, or vice versa. Some of the disappointing things that we saw here, New Orleans, which is a brand new hospital, Denver, which is a brand new hospital, they're both 1- and 2-star facilities. We think when we're talking about these great structures and the infrastructure they've put in and millions and billions of dollars, those should be some of the top hospitals. Cleveland, which is one of the newer hospitals, is a 5-star facility. So that's good. So we can look at some of these 5-star hospitals and really start trying to figure out who should be emulating them. Phoenix, which was the epicenter, the ground zero of the big scandals that really rocked the VA back in cost General Shinseki his job as a secretary. That's a 1-star facility still. So we're really disappointed in that. And we're going to actually be going down. AMVETS, I'll be missing a show, or we might have someone else in here. I might be able to call in from Phoenix, but we're going to be going down and doing a town hall meeting later this month in Phoenix. And as soon as this came out, we knew we need to do that. We need to go talk to the veterans. We need to find out why, from their perspective, it's a 1-star facility. So the star rating is based on a lot of different things. It's not just the doctors saying, hey, this is how good we are. There's a lot of metrics. And then one part of it also is the patient satisfaction. So when they did the I Choose VA or My VA, they put kiosks into all the VA medical facilities.
Right.
That surveyed veterans and asked them, you know, about their experiences, about how they're treated attitude-wise, how long they have to wait, whether they feel like the healthcare that they received was high quality, whether their questions were answered, all those really important things. And Phoenix had one of the lowest ones, so we need to go out there, and we'll be partnering with the VA, and we'll be talking to veterans. The VA won't be part of the conversation. It'll be just the veterans and us talking, and we're looking forward to that. And then we're going to be able to turn around and give a report to the VA on what our findings are there in Phoenix and elsewhere.
You know, when you say 19 out of 146, that number stuck out to me because 19 is not a huge number. 19 medical facilities, I mean, that's a lot of patients. And yes, it's 19, and it should be 0 that are 1-star facilities, in my opinion. But 19 out of 146 is over 10%. That's closer to 15%. So more than 1 in 10 of the VA medical centers are one-star rated, including a brand new one like that facility. I think the Denver one is actually in Aurora, which is right outside of it, which was a boondoggle when they made it. It cost a lot more money and took a lot more time than it was supposed to. The thing that they said when explaining the overtures and costs and all that stuff, the overture that they made to everybody else was, well, it's so state of the art. It's going to be so wonderful. Now we're hearing that it's a one-star facility. It's I guess the question that everybody has is, why is that happening? Is it geographically based? Because we know that, you know, you may have better doctors in one specific area. People who, you know, grew up in the Northeast, for example. There's a lot of great medical centers. You think of Yale, New Haven. You think of, the Langone Medical Center, North Shore, LIJ, all these great medical centers up there. They might want to stay up there, and it might be harder to get medical professionals to go to some areas where not that many of them come from. Is that one of the aspects that you think is causing this?
So my understanding for Denver is it's a lack of capacity, and it's because they're having trouble hiring enough providers. And it is a massive facility, and as you said, state of the art. And when you drop a big hospital into what's already a rapidly growing community, you're going to have trouble finding new medical providers to be able to work there, is our understanding. But as you said early on in here, this is a facility that took a long time to build. They had plenty of time to be planning for these types of things. The federal government has the ability to be able to transfer people and, you know, to be able to pay for that. And there's a lot of funding for that. So we're still just very disappointed to see that. And this should be one of the shining examples, like the Cleveland facility. But right now it's not, and I'm sure we'll be there. We're looking at probably going to Denver in February to finding out directly from the veterans what's happening.
I think one of the things that you need to consider when talking about these one-star ratings is the fact that, as you said, the patient feedback is a big part of it. That can be a positive or a negative in this way. Some people are just always going to be unhappy with the VA. They're going to want something that's just not doable. They're not going to get it. They're going to complain about that. It makes me think back to being in college and people who would grade a professor low because they got a low grade because they didn't do the work. You know, there's going to be some of that going on, but let's hope that most of our veterans are being honest about those things. Do you think also that with a place like Phoenix, in that specific scenario with the feedback rating, do you think that there could be an issue where people have this preconceived notion of the care that they're going to get there, and they might be reacting more to that than what's actually happening?
That's a guess. I will tell you, though, every secretary we've had since then has seemingly gone to Phoenix once a month. I mean, we have top officials from Washington out there on a constant basis. It's almost a revolving door of secretaries, undersecretaries, deputy secretaries that are out there constantly. So it's really disappointing that all of that scrutiny and extra attention that's received still hasn't been able to even get it to a 2-star. So we're really looking forward to hearing directly from the veterans, from family members, caregivers, and medical providers there.
I am interested. I'd be interested to find out what role geography does play in it. It's like, you know, if you're in Phoenix and you want to start a hockey team, you're probably going to have trouble finding a lot of great hockey players down there. Can that be a similar issue with the medical community? You know, certain areas, if you want to start a tech company, you want to be in the Bay Area, Silicon Valley. That's where the people who are best at that tend to come from, tend to congregate to. It'd be interesting to find out if that plays any role. Of course, someone who's going to play a role in any changes that happen at these facilities is going to be, of course, well, one, the leader of VHA, but also Secretary of the VA, Robert Wilkie. He's been in place for a couple of months. Have you heard anything from him on how he plans to attack the issue of over 10% of their facilities being 1-star rated?
So they are creating tiger teams that are going to be going to, and they have already been going to, the underperforming facilities and figuring out exactly what's wrong and then coming up with a game plan. It's been a little bit less than collaborative lately with the VA. It started off really well. Secretary Wilkie has told us he'd be very collaborative. They just had a quarterly meeting, as they defined it, last Friday, where they kind of briefed us, but it was really one-way communication. So we're hoping to be a stronger part of the conversation when they figure out how to address the shortcomings. Again, I think it's really important to look at the really high-performing facilities and see what their secrets to success are.
Yeah, that's something that you should look at. You know, when trying to find the path to greatness, you want to follow sometimes those people who have already achieved it, or in this case, those facilities who have already achieved it. We're speaking to Joe Schinelli, Marine Corps veteran and executive director of American Veterans, a.k.a. AMVETS, here on The Morning Briefing, brought to you by ConnectingVets.com. Follow us on social media. We are at ConnectingVets on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. President Trump on Wednesday donated his second quarter salary. This is something he announced he was going to do, I think maybe even before he was elected, or at least early on in the presidency. He said, listen, I've got a lot of money. I don't really need this presidential salary. I'm going to donate it. Kind of a goodwill gesture. He's actually chosen a veteran-related group for his most recent donation of his salary. What can you tell us about that?
So this is, he does this every quarter. It's $100,000. And so initially he said he was going to donate to veterans organizations. They kind of came back to him, his attorneys, and said, you need to keep it within the federal government. So he picks different programs within the federal government. And this is the second time a veterans focused program has been chosen. The first time was to help caregivers, which is obviously a really important program. But this here is to help veterans who want to become entrepreneurs or already are entrepreneurs. So he actually donated the money to the Small Business Administration, which Secretary Linda McMahon of WWE fame.
Connecticut native, just like myself, based out of Stamford, my hometown.
Aside from the news here for a second, it's just still surreal to me that we have a McMahon in the administration.
Well, she was almost in the Senate. She ran for Senate against Chris Murphy's and came pretty close. It was a pretty close race.
And obviously WWF, WWE.
Successful company, man.
It's, geniuses, no doubt.
It's based out of my city. I know a lot of people who've worked there. I've been to their facility. Kind of ruined wrestling for me when I was a kid and went in there and didn't see the Ultimate Warrior suplexing Hulk Hogan through a table or something. I was sure it was going to be like that, but it was not.
So when I first came to D.C., I worked a little event security as a side job.
Yep.
In the evenings, I worked a WWE event over at the big Verizon Center here, and I was sitting in the back, and they had scripts sitting on the tables all over the place. It was just
broke your heart, didn't it?
It was like someone telling me about Santa.
Imagine that happening when you're 12 years old, because that's what ruined it for me. But anyway, back to the news.
Yes.
She is now leading the Small Business Administration, and the president donated his salary to specifically help veteran entrepreneurs, you're saying?
Yes, and so it's $100,000 into a program that has about $800,000 already, so that's a good percentage of an increase, and it's going to be able to help more veterans be able to have formal training, but also they have mentor programs. So they have some very highly successful entrepreneurs. I don't know if Vince McMahon's one of them, but they have highly successful entrepreneurs who mentor veterans who are trying to go into business for themselves. And that obviously that's very valuable. They also have different funded loans, interest-free loans. Some are grants. So this can definitely help veterans. Veterans make great entrepreneurs because we're mission-focused, because we have to be self-starters, but also because we have, a lot of us have healthcare insurance, or we have a pension if you've retired, or if you have a partial service connection disability. And so the risk is a little bit lower. But veterans, by and large, are the biggest demographic when it comes to being successful entrepreneurs. So I think the president made a great decision here on this, and we're thankful for it. And so we sent a letter over to the president yesterday thanking him for this. And hopefully this is the second program that he's donated to. Hopefully there'll be more for veterans.
It'd be very cool to see. One thing that's cool to see is you were saying you've been kind of disappointed with the recent lack of collaboration with the VA, but they've announced that they're going to fund the first National Center of Excellence for Veteran and Caregiver Research. And while it may not have been as collaborative as you'd like recently, that's still a good thing, right?
Absolutely. So this has been in the works for a little while now. And the VA has kind of found different things that they're very good at and that are very important. And they've created centers of excellence for them. And so this is the latest one, and one that we think has been needed for quite a while. This will focus on the research and the actual implementation of helping caregivers. So we're back to the hidden heroes, if you will. They've named this one after Elizabeth Dole, who's really been a champion of this cause and someone we work closely with, and Sherman Gillums, who was on the show last week with you. He is the vice chair of the National Caregivers Advisory Committee, and Senator Dole, she is the chair. And they actually just met here in Washington last night. And so the Center of Excellence is named after her. What this does is it brings academia, it brings the medical profession and the medical industry, and it brings caregivers all together to really develop best practices and to be able to provide immediate direct support to caregivers. As we've talked about on the show before, we just recently were able to secure resources and benefits for pre-9/11 veterans caregivers. So this is bringing the pre-9/11 and the post-9/11 caregivers together. Everyone's on the same footing. We're going to really be able to use the expertise. And our caregivers are, they save the government a ton of money. And they really, really improve the quality of life for the veteran who's suffering by being able to take care of them at home where they can be most comfortable and where their medical care can actually be most effective. So we're really happy with this, and we look forward to working with them a lot on this.
I think it's important, too, to include all generations of caregivers there as well, because there is kind of this focus now on the post-9/11 generation, because we're the ones that just got back. We're right there in front of you. You're not seeing the Vietnam veteran come home. That happened, 40 years ago now, 45 years ago, the last one's coming home. You're not seeing the World War II veteran, the Korea veteran, but they are out there. A lot more of them than there are of the post-9/11 generation. And as you and I have both seen on social media and online, there's a little bit of anger, and some of it justified from those previous generations, over the lack of attention given to them who are dealing with the exact same things, and in some cases worse, and in each case, they've been dealing with it for a much longer period of time. It's really a solid thing that they're doing to me to include all generations in this. Would you agree on that?
Oh, absolutely. We had a fight for it for almost a decade for the funding. So we're so glad it's there. Now we're really happy they're going to be involved in this Center of Excellence as well.
Yeah, and that research is a key. And there's a lot of things that they can look at. Again, you know, when it comes to research at the VA, let's use the most recent topic that everybody's been focused on, the medical marijuana issue. The VA has essentially refused to research it. They've tried to claim there are laws keeping them from research it, and then you find out, well, you're actually allowed to research it, but under federal rules, you can only research marijuana grown at Mississippi State University for some odd reason, and that's apparently not very high-quality stuff. Not an expert myself, so can't tell you. I mean, the research is the first step for getting anything done, whether it's that issue or something else. Research into what caregivers need, what caregivers could use, that's something that could just be, it could be a game changer in the veteran and caregiver community.
Absolutely. And when we talk about the generation that's been caregiving for quite a while, but when you have a brand new caregiver, I mean, there's going to be, you know, an unfortunate truth is there'll be new disabled veterans this month, you know, maybe even today, and they're going to require care. And so you often end up with a 25-year-old spouse caring for her or his spouse who's now been injured, and so they're looking at the next 70 years maybe. And so to be able to give them best practices and be able to give them a resources book and mentorship right off the bat, you know, it's going to be very helpful.
Yeah, it's like an SOP in the military. If you don't have one of those and you're starting something up, it's more difficult. But when somebody's already done it, when you're arriving at a command and they're able to just give you a rundown of what you should do, give you that turnover, that is huge, that is key, and it's something that we do need to see more of in the caregiver community. There are certainly organizations that are doing that, whether you're talking about DAV, PVA, AMVETS. I mean, there's so many organizations that are out there to help veterans and their caregivers, but getting more of it and getting some of it from the VA with that federal backing, that is a huge deal. Also a huge deal, which we touched on in the early segment of the program today, Deploy or Get Out. It's a new policy under Secretary of Defense Mattis. 7,000 Marines might be gone in less than the 12 months they think they had, as being reported now. But where do you stand on this Deploy or Get Out thing? Where's AMVET's official line on it?
So my wife is a service-connected disabled Air Force veteran. And while she was in, she developed asthma and became pretty serious at times. And they declared her non-deployable because they felt that a less than clean environment could cause some pretty serious asthma attacks. So she decided on her own to leave the military after 9 years. She had planned to do 11 more and at least, but she decided to get out because she did not want to have other airmen have to pick up the slack that she would be right. leaving. And she just really couldn't stand that, the idea of that. And I carry that concept as well. And I think, as I said in the earlier segment, I kind of went through the Marine Corps thinking that was already the rule. It just wouldn't make sense. So I personally think the Secretary of Defense, Mattis, of course, don't disagree with him very often, but I think he's 100% right on this thing here. And mission accomplishment has to be first.
I think you and I had to have both seen it. Now, we've both got the veteran enhancement package. That's the gut and the beard. I've also got the Harley, so I've got the deluxe edition of the veteran enhancement package. But I think we both saw while we were in and in better shape, there were those people you'd see and you'd just be like, what the heck is going on with that? How are you going to weigh 350 pounds and be 5'7" in the military where there's gaps in between your uniform blouse because the buttons are too I mean, it's just that stuff happens. And then, of course, the medical issues and people that are, oh, man, the big one for me was people got pregnant on purpose to avoid deploying. I saw that happen several times. But something that certainly needs to be addressed and something that it appears DOD is addressing under Secretary of Defense Mattis. Kind of one of those benefits of him having so recently served. He saw that too. He saw some fat Marines wandering around, I'm sure. And now he's able to do a big thing about that, not just for the Marine Corps, but for all branches of the service. Speaking of Marines, our guest for this segment has been Executive Director of AMVETS, Joe Schinelli, Marine Corps vet. And, of course, Joe, if people want to find out more about AMVETS, where do they go to do so?
Please find us online at amvets.org or at any social media platform. I'm not quite so sure about MySpace anymore.
Yeah.
AMVETS HQ.
Check them out on Friendster, though. That's a good one to go to. You've been listening to the Morning Briefing Thursday edition. Coming up tomorrow, VFW will be in the house, and we're going to talk to Jason Justice about the Veteran Beverage Conference. It's coming up. Oh, that's going to be a tasty one. And it's all coming tomorrow. Have a great day. We'll see you here. We'll see you here tomorrow at 8:15 a.m. sharp. Morning Briefing. Signing off.